Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Richard Barrett, who is the author of A New Psychology of Human Well-Being, an exploration of the influence of ego-soul dynamics in mental and physical health. Richard is an author, speaker, and internationally recognized thought leader on the evolution of human values in business and society. He's the founder and chairman of Barrett Values Center, a fellow of the World Business Academy, and a former values coordinator of the at the World Bank. This is a very interesting combination of psychological analysis and Eastern thought with consciousness research thrown in to help us understand how we develop in individual lifetimes and how mental and physical illness can result from the lack of proper development. Thanks, Richard, for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm glad to be with you.
So this is interesting that you are, trained in business primarily, not psychology. Is that right?
No, not quite right either. My first training was engineering, and after about 20 years, I realized I was bored stiff with my engineering career, which had taken off, and I was very successful. But what I'd realized I'd been studying all my life was psychology. I'd started when I was 20, reading all the psychological books, Eastern tradition, Western tradition. And so when I got to 45 and realized I was bored with my career, I said, well, you know, what have I been studying? And I realized that what I was passionate about was the soul. And so I started writing a book called A Guide to Liberating Your Soul, and that led to 9 other books, which I've written in the past, most of which I've written in the past 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, the one in 2015 was The Metrics of Human Consciousness. That sounds interesting.
Correct, yeah, that was the metric. That was, you see, in around 1997, having developed a model, a 7 levels of consciousness model, and figured out how to map values, people's values, to this model, I was able to measure consciousness and what levels of consciousness people were operating at. And I built up a company which is now operates worldwide in over 100 countries, where we actually map the values of organizations and individuals. In fact, listeners can actually go online and map their values by going to Values Center, CENTRE, that's all one word, .com/PVA, Personal Values Assessment. And in a couple of minutes, they will get feedback, having answered a few questions, as to what values, well, they'll pick the values that are important to them, but you'll see what levels of consciousness you're operating from when you after you've picked your values, and get an explanation of what the model is about. Anyhow, this was very successful, and so I developed this organization, which is, and I was CEO for a while, first 10 years, and then I wanted to focus on writing my books. So I handed the company over to my partners to operate so I could spend my time writing books. And as I said, I've written 6 books in the last 6 years, because that's what I love to do.
Well, that's great. I'm a plastic surgeon, as you probably know, and psychology is very important in plastic surgery. And I got my training in psychology because my mother, when I was in junior high, got her PhD in child psychology at the University of Kansas, and then became a professor. She was an operant behavioralist, and I actually met B.F. Skinner. But I read all her books, you know, all the transpersonal psychology, Jung, and everything. And, you know, some of it just didn't ring at all if it was like third dimensional. My mother was very third dimensional, so she was an operant behavioralist because you can change behavior, which is all very third dimensional. But I was more intrigued by the idea that we live in a multidimensional universe, because it always made a lot more sense to me. And I think a lot of our what we fail to understand about what happens here is because we do not understand we live in a multidimensional reality.
That is exactly the theme of the book, A New Psychology of Human Well-being. I wrote this book because I wanted to, for two reasons. I wanted to bring the soul back into psychology, because since Carl Jung, since Roberto Assaggioli, since Maslow, the soul has disappeared. It's become cognitive psychology. So I wanted to bring the soul back right into the center of psychology, and I wanted to get over the idea that there are stages of psychological development, that there are seven such stages of development, and we begin the very, very beginning of our life, the moment of conception, and shortly thereafter, in soul consciousness, the reptilian mind brain forms and pushes the soul consciousness into the subconscious, the reptilian mind being the body mind, and then around 2 or 3 years of old, around 2 years of age, the limbic mind brain becomes dominant, and the body mind becomes the subconscious, the soul mind becomes the unconscious, and then around 7 or 8 years old, the neocortex becomes dominant, the rational mind, and so now the emotional mind becomes the subconscious, the body mind becomes the unconscious, and the soul mind gets pushed way back into the super unconscious. And so we spend the first 24 years of our lives, you know, having our brain develop, these three brains. The next part of our lives, we individuate. That was what Carl Jung talked about, and that's when we let go of the fears we learned during the first 3 years, so that we can prepare ourselves for the soul activation, three stages of soul activation, which Maslow talked about. He talked about self-actualization. I've broken that down into three different stages, self-expression, connection, and contribution. So I'm totally on board with you around this. We live in a multidimensional world, and Einstein was very familiar with that. But most people don't realize we live in this multidimensional world. We live in a, actually, the soul lives in a fourth dimensional energetic world. The energetic world is so fundamentally, is actually the container in which we live.
Yeah, in your book, you say that in this soul dimension, we're all connected. And that would explain, you know, the intuition, the kind of knowing when the phone rings, who's on the other end, the synchronicities, and the information that is not logical, that all of us have access to, that is actually very protective. And so that is in the realm of the soul, where our spiritual protection resides. Even though our ego is always like forming opinions about stuff in the third dimension that might be unsafe for us, but the ego doesn't have the range of, awareness that the soul does. The soul is way more equipped to protect us.
Absolutely. There are a couple of things, metaphors we can use here. One of the metaphors I use in the book is a comb, you know, we use for combing our hair. If you cover up the top half of the comb, all you see are the separate teeth. And that's our three-dimensional material awareness. We see separation. When you lift your hand above the comb, you see the top part of the comb, which is the bit that connects everything. So that's exactly how we are in the fourth dimension of awareness. But in fact, you know, three-dimensional material awareness isn't a property of the world that we live in. It's a property of our perception. Our five senses can only sense a very narrow band of frequencies of vibration. And so we believe we live in this material world. It's like like an old radio, our perception, our physical perception. It's like you can only tune in to say five bands or right. frequencies, and whereas the soul's radio can tune into 2,000 or 3,000 frequencies. And so that's the connected part. So if we can tap into soul consciousness, we can actually experience all of these things that like clairvoyance, clairaudience. We can read the signs that come with synchronicity. We can hear the voice of the soul. And most of my books are written by soul impulse. In fact, just this morning, I'm working on a new book, and I awoke, and I got a complete set of thoughts around
right.
the particular piece of the book that I'm working on right now.
Well, most writers understand that they really channel the material. And I know I've written several books, and it just is like a tape recording. It's very interesting. It's very, very interesting.
Yes.
How that happens.
What happens is I get the inspiration from the soul, the idea, the approach, mm-hmm. etc. And then what I do is I use my cognitive mind to do research, which mm-hmm. will then support the idea that I came up with, that my soul came up with and expressed to me. And that's basically how I write my book.
Yeah, we all have spiritual guides. And then we also have from our soul directly, we have our soul purpose. You know, my purpose right now anyway is to help women who are deathly ill from toxic effects of breast implants. You know, over in England, you've had a lot of PIP implants put in women that were very, very toxic. And I communicate almost daily with women from England and Canada and Australia and even Europe and the rest of the world that are deathly ill. So, you know, so you have your soul purpose that is often, as you said, grounded in service. And then, you know, you write books around that or you do education or whatever you need to do in order to help people who are, you know, struggling.
Yeah. So, you know, over the last 20 years, when I started my company, I spent the first 10 or 12 years focusing on organizations and helping leaders and organizations improve the level of well-being by mapping the values of the culture. Mm-hmm. Over that time, and more recently, we've even been mapping the values of nations. Mm-hmm. But my sole impulse over the past few years has been to go back to my origins and start writing and restart writing around let's call it personal transformation, but it's much more than that. In the book that I've just written, I link the seven levels of consciousness to the stages of psychological development, which I link to the chakra system, which I link to the leading causes of death. And so my whole thesis is that everything is energetic, and when you fail to master a stage of psychological development, there is a direct consequence in the energetic field, in your energetic field, which is the part of the field that is affected, is the stage of development that's linked to a particular chakra. So you talked about breasts, and I want to mention breast cancer here. Having studied the amount of incidence of breast cancer in several countries, I realized that it was linked to what I call the fifth stage of development, which is is the first stage of soul activation, which is all around self-expression, the expression of the soul, linked to your purpose, linked to your values. And when women fail to fully express or express who they are, they sacrifice this self-expression for their spouse or for their children or for some other reason, or are blocked. This leads to a failure at this level, which is linked to the fifth chakra, the throat chakra, and the upper chest, and which results in breast cancer. For men, it's slightly different. It's the next stage of development, which usually occurs in the 50s, and that's prostate cancer or late 50s. And that's linked to the second stage of soul activation, which is all about connecting. So at the first stage of soul activation, you've found meaning in your life and you've found your purpose, and now you want to make a difference. But in order to make a difference, you have to connect with other people. And of course, young boys are taught not to show their feelings. They're not very good at connecting. And so a failure to connect and the second stage of soul activation links through to the second chakra and the prostate gland, causing prostate cancer. But in the book, you will find lots of different connections. Each stage of failure, at each stage of development, I show how it leads to leading causes of death around the world.
There is a theory that comes from the chakras that whenever the chakras are not healthy and spinning in the correct direction, that there can be an energetic, issue in that area. And lowering the energy, say, in the one that Barbara Brennan has in her book, is that whenever you feel that you're better than others, which is a thought that's not considered to be, high spiritual development. You go around, you're very proud, you're very arrogant, and you think you're better than others. That lowers the energy in the solar plexus chakra, and then that leads to feeling nature of sometimes you think you're better, but then other times you think you're not as good, so you vacillate in between. And then it settles down into the physical level as lowering that energy and making one more prone to ulcers or disease in the area of the solar plexus. So lowering the energy of the chakra is how that occurs. But there is also physical things like H. pylori. If one swallows H. pylori, one will get ulcers. So you've got the idea that there are physical things in the third dimension. Like if one is suddenly exposed to smart meters, we're finding that a large amount of cancer is coming from the exposure to smart meters, the Wi-Fi system. So a physical thing can be the sole cause of cancer in some cases. And then in some cases, if you swallow H. pylori, you're going to get an ulcer no matter what the stage of that thing is. So I think it's a combination of the two. Like a lot of women who get deathly ill, many of them get intracellular infection that is results in rheumatoid arthritis. Mycoplasma is known to cause that. But it's the immune deficiency from the implant, the toxic nature of the implant, that causes the susceptibility to mycoplasma pneumonia, which then infects the joint and gives them rheumatoid arthritis. So you see that it can be a lot. It can be complicated because there's toxic elements, both electromagnetic, geopathic stress, and then frank toxic chemicals that we're exposed to, like cigarette smoking and lung cancer. But it is true that if you have a chakra disruption, because of, like what I just said, that you're arrogant and it affects your solar plexus chakra, you're more prone to H. pylori if you get exposed to it because the energy of that area is down. So I would agree that in an ideal world without all these massive toxic exposures that we're being exposed to, that the chakra theory would predominate. But because we have so many toxins in our environment right now, I think people are getting sick even without the chakra being affected. That's just my personal experience. We've run a cancer clinic here since 1999, and we do muscle testing to determine the cause of the cancer, which is usually decrease energy in the organ. Like hormonal, people who are put on high levels of hormones can develop breast cancer, and the only cause they have is hormonal. So you see, that probably would never have happened if they hadn't been put on the inappropriate estrogens at a very high level. So it's a little more complicated than just a chakra issue, but certainly without the toxicity and the electromagnetic pollution we have, I think your system is very valid.
So I'd like to take this conversation a step further, you see, because the assumption that I'm making in the book is that everything in our so-called material world is energetic in nature. And so even a toxin, everything material, everything in our material world is energetic in nature. And that's what quantum theory tells us. That's what Einstein tells us. So it's useful to be able to say, oh, well, you know, when you take this pill or when you take that, it affects your body in this way. But I think what we have to realize is that even when you take something that is toxic, actually, it's all happening at the energetic level because there is, you know, materiality is an illusion. So it's an energetic reaction to a foreign energetic body, if you like. It all has to do with the energy field. And I think that's the, for me, that's the next leap that we have to make in the way that we look at medicine, rather than having one foot in one world and one foot in the material world and one foot in the energetic world. Now, that's going to take a long time to happen, but you can't say that we live in an energetic world and then start to explain what is happening by using language that refers to the material world.
Well, true, but in terms of really, really dangerous things like Ram Dass described that his master took a handful of LSD and nothing happened, okay? So at the level of a master, perhaps you can take these substances into your body and have no change in consciousness. But we're not all at the level of a master. So therefore, when your doctor puts you on inappropriate medication that then causes a problem, or a doctor puts breast implants in you that then rupture and cause a massive toxic problem that takes out your T-cell immunity, all I'm saying is that those toxic exposures might be part of one's soul growth. In other words, you weren't aware intuitively that maybe those breast implants were dangerous, and then later on you develop more intuition. But all I'm saying is that they're at the level that we're at, which is mostly not, very few of us are realized masters at this point, we stumble into toxic situations that then we have to figure out how to get out of.
I'm with you. I'm not against you in any way, shape, or form, and I agree with these. I mean, there's a level at which life has to do with chemistry, and that's what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Very few people are masters who are totally living in an energetic world and not affected by physical substances. In fact, nearly all of us, there's hardly anybody who's there. So, you're absolutely correct. But all I'm trying to say here is that if we are convinced that we're energetic beings and we live in an energetic world, then there is a sense in which everything has a frequency of vibration. And when that frequency of vibration is, counterproductive to our healthy frequency of vibration, then it will affect our health. So what people need, I think, is exactly the sort of advice that you're giving, and that is, you have to beware of this and the toxicity and that toxicity, because it's going to affect the chemistry of your body. What's going to happen is that the body-mind, which keeps homeostatic functioning working, has to work overtime to deal with that toxicity, and that leads to the stress in the body mind, which leads to stress in the energetic field, which leads to stress in the body and causing illness and dis-ease.
Exactly. And I think in my book, The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, we have 7 patient stories. And it's real obvious from the patient stories that a great deal of spiritual development occurs because of this breast implant illness in these patients. In other words, they become more intuitive. They become more aware. They lead a healthier lifestyle than they would have had they not had this health challenge. So at the level of the soul, we may decide to get implants. And in order to have this occur so that we may have a more spiritually based life, because when you're sick and can hardly function for 3 hours a day, more spiritual development tends to occur than if you're really busy with, you know, your family and your job and your community. A lot of times when the busyness keeps you from spiritual development.
So that's an interesting idea, and I'd like to offer a slightly different idea. You say when the decision of the soul to have implants. For me, I see the ego making decisions about to have implants because, you know, I don't know your field, and I don't know this, but I'm suggesting that what is going on is simply the fact that there's a belief that the body is not perfect, and if the blood body was perfect, then you would feel happier. And so,
let me give you my own experience.
Yeah,
I was spiritually guided in meditation to get breast implants, and I didn't even want them. But I was in the military; they were totally free. I knew personally the person that put them in. He had been my boss and was a great surgeon. And it was a spiritual directive because then I had to get sick in order to learn about the toxic nature of the illness. I'm the only person in the world who's figured it out. Chemical toxicity and silicone implants and biotoxicity from mold and saline implants, because it's a very complicated disease. There's 6 different kinds of infection and 4 different types of toxicities that you have to know about in order to get these patients well. So at least in my case, it was a directive from the soul, because my sole purpose was to help women who are going to become sick from breast implant disease. So at least for me, it was
totally
soul.
Yeah. So that's a really,
because it was my sole purpose, so it had to be.
Yeah.
Now I do think some women. I do think some women are not. Well, I know some of the women who get implants had a very strong feeling right before they went in to not get them. Okay.
Yep.
But they didn't listen.
Yep.
Now that is another kind of education. You know, not listening to that higher guidance that we all get.
Exactly. So not everybody who gets breast implants does so because of a soul reason. They may do.
Absolutely not.
It.
Yeah. No, it can be ego driven. No, actually, it can be the idea of the husband or the boyfriend. That's often.
Yeah, but then
the woman didn't even really want him that much, but was pressured into it. So that's a lesson in not being pressured into things.
Well, that's a lesson into being independent, isn't it?
Right.
So the interesting point is that all of these lead to higher spiritual awareness. If you know whether it was a soul prompt or whether it was an ego decision to do that, the illness that follows leads one into a deeper spiritual understanding of who one is, and that's what all illness does.
Cancer does the same thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. I would agree with that. And in the book, I talk about all pain being positive, because pain tells you exactly where you're out of alignment, either energetically, either emotionally, or how your body, mind, or the energetic field of your body is out of alignment with the soul mind. So we need to pay tremendous attention to these thoughts and impulses that come from the soul, even though the ego is, you know, hell-bent on getting a particular result, I would agree with you that we need to listen.
So would you explain for the listening audience your definition of the ego? They may not not understand how ego development occurs.
Okay, so before I do that, let me just say that the ego is the creation of the soul. And now let me tell you why the ego, mm-hmm. the soul creates ego. Okay, so the soul lives in this fourth dimensional energetic world, which is a world of love and connection. And it incarnates into the human embryo, and the body to have this experience of three-dimensional material awareness. Now, once the reptilian mind brain is formed after about 10 weeks of gestation, the soul mind becomes a subconscious, and when the reptilian mind brain is challenged to function, maintain its homeostatic functioning, like by the mother smoking or drinking or being overly agitated, and the baby's still in the womb, the baby feels that, and the reptilian mind brain has to struggle a little bit to maintain the homeostatic functioning of the baby in the womb. That is felt by the soul mind as a lack of love. So that struggle, the struggle of the reptilian mind brain to maintain energetic homeostatic function, it appears as a lack of love in the soul. Now, when the baby is born, any pain that the baby's body experiences, again, is felt as a lack of love. Mm-hmm. Then, during the first year of life, the baby is feels that it is living in oneness. The soul is still the subconscious of the body-mind, and so it's still living in this. It hasn't yet separated itself out and realizing that it's living in a material world. But towards the end of the year, 15, 18 months, the baby begins to recognize that separation. And for the soul mind, that again is painful. And so it's at that point, I guess around 18 months, that the mm-hmm. soul creates the psychic entity we call the ego to act as a buffer to the pain of the lack of love it is feeling from being in the physical material world. Now, the ego it has this will to survive, feel safe, and feel secure. So where does the will of the ego, where does the survival instinct come from? Well, the survival instinct comes from the will of the soul to be present in three-dimensional mm-hmm. material awareness. That's where the survival instinct comes from. And so the ego, the psychic entity we call the ego, takes on that role as guardian of the soul by keeping us, helping us to survive, feel safe, and secure. The challenge during the first 2 years of life is to survive. The challenge during the next 4, 5 or 6 years is to feel safe. And then by the mm-hmm. time we get to 8 and the neocortex comes in, then the challenge is to feel secure in this larger world outside of the family home. So the ego develops through those three stages and becomes a viable independent. You become a viable independent entity, hopefully, by the time you're 24 or 25. Now, that's perfect for the soul because the ego has become viable independent and is now, during the individuating stage, the ego begins to blend with the soul once more. So the soul can reactivate in the 40s and become, mm-hmm. you can live in soul consciousness. Now, many people on the planet never get to the individuating stage because of all of the fears that their ego developed about survival, safety, and self-esteem, or the people living in, let's say, the former USSR, or living in China, or living in North Korea. They live in an autocratic regime where anybody who speaks up, speaks their mind, is put in prison or might even get put to death. And so that's the individuating stage, the sense of wanting to be free to express who you really are, and the self-actualization stage. So that's the ego is a mask that we wear to get our needs met in the cultural framework of our existence. That's how I would define the ego.
Now, you do mention sudden infant death syndrome, and some of the masters have said that SIDS is the soul withdrawing the contract. Of course, this is before the ego emerges, which is probably around the time of the terrible twos, but it's interesting that many parents of SIDS babies have a tremendous amount of guilt that that may actually have some bearing. In other words, say the child is born into a household where both parents intend to do well, but then one falls short and maybe emotionally leaves the marriage or starts to gamble again or whatever. And then the soul says, nope, this isn't what I signed up for. And then SIDS occurs. So it's an interesting idea that SIDS may actually be the soul withdrawing the contract.
That may be true and possibly is true, but the way I look at it in the book is, first of all SIDS occur in the first year of a baby's life, and that it is, for me, it's a slightly different interpretation, and that is that the soul is feeling the pain of being in three-dimensional material awareness. And it may be that that's a young soul that is not used to this experience. But whatever it is, and it could be, as you say, the knowing soul realizing that there's been a mistake, this is not...
Well, somebody's reneged on their agreements, you know. Say if the father starts to gamble again, then the child's supposed to be a doctor. Well, the father gambling is likely to put that in jeopardy, you see, because of the financial means will not be there.
Yeah.
The soul might say, that wasn't supposed to happen, and I can't be a doctor in this lifetime, and I need to be a doctor in this lifetime because my soul purpose is linked to that, so I'm going to go back out and come back in some other way where it looks better. I really think that those kind of things do happen.
That could be true. I don't discuss that in my book. What I discuss is the pain of the soul about being in three-dimensional material awareness and deciding.
Same
that
thing, though. isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It really is. You know, if the energy is not lining up to help that soul create its soul purpose, then why should it stay?
Exactly. But it is a very sensitive topic, as you pointed out at the beginning.
Yeah,
for
it
parents
is.
I think I tried to handle it very gently in the book and say
right.
to parents, don't blame yourself for this. This might
That's
be a,
true.
This may be this is a might be a young soul who's never incarnated or has not and they found the
right.
experience is so painful that
it decided to withdraw.
Continue,
well, it's probably
yeah.
all of that, though. I mean, like we were discussing before, the causes of things are very, I mean, everything from physical reality all the way up to soul contracts. So, you know, there's many, many reasons for things that happen. It's not just one thing.
This is absolutely true. And anyhow, I've tried to stay within the normal bounds of so-called scientific understanding.
Mm-hmm.
In the book to explain, things like I mentioned, that you know, where does the will to survive come from? You know, you will not find that. You will not find that explained in any scientific journal. I have looked. And to me, it makes complete sense that it's the will of the soul to be present in three-dimensional material reality.
Well, one thing I've done a lot of is read the books of the masters, you know, Mer Baba, Sai Baba, the masters from Cyprus. The masters, especially when you're studying medicine and health, the masters have a great deal of insight into what causes things. And that's because they also have a great deal of insight into how the physical worlds are created, you know, in like from the highest level down to the level we find ourselves into. So I mean, a lot of what I'm saying is just coming from what the masters say. And of course, there's no scientific proof of that because, you know, they get it from direct revelation. But when you put all of that together, there's a great deal of support in what the masters teach and what you're bringing forth in the new psychology of human well-being. You know, the idea of downward causation and the idea that that there are many levels of this multidimensional reality that we live in and that they all affect each other.
Yes, and so I have... That's a very interesting point you're making there. As I said, all of the revelations that I've received from my soul, which helped me significantly in writing this book, I have tried to back up in the book with scientific evidence. And so I don't wander too far away from the knowledge that has been acquired and is well understood. Having said that, I was able to, you know, completely link body, mind, and soul, link the stages of psychological development to the leading causes of death, and I was able to do that with reference to lots of research that's been going on, particularly in the last 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, heart disease is one of the most common causes of death, and because I think the statistics are still that 40% of your first heart attack leads to death because of arrhythmias. So unless you're near an AED device or somebody that knows CPR, you're going to be in trouble. So heart disease, just as an example, is more likely to occur if one's heart chakra is not in alignment. If the chakra is spinning backwards, per se. So people who are very judgmental, people who are very angry, people who are very have a lot of lack of love due to conditions put on that love are more likely to develop heart disease.
That is correct. And so that's the fourth stage of psychological development, is the individuating stage, which usually occurs somewhere between 25 and late 30s. Now, when you have difficulties at that level, in the energetic level, at the psychological level, it shows up in the physical body 10 to 15 years later. That is what I found, that the linkage to a failure of a stage of psychological development shows up 10 to 15 years later in the physical body, because it starts in the energetic body and moves to the physical body. Now, the other interesting factor, so that heart attacks tend to increase significantly in the late 40s, 50s, and onwards. Now, there is something that I've noticed, and I've had at least three or four friends who died of a heart attack almost at the age of 50, just the year before or year after. And what I've known about those, people is they had really, really difficult early childhood. And for me, so what I see there happening is that in early childhood, when the reptilian mind brain is dominant and the soul mind is subconscious, and when the limbic mind brain is dominant, the soul mind is the unconscious, any pain that you experience about surviving or feeling loved will be anchored into, is repressed from the dominant mind and gets anchored into the soul mind at the level of the heart chakra. And so when you then reach the individuating stage, which is about the opening of the heart chakra, these energies, this pain, begins to be released, and then results in death from a heart attack, late 40s, early 50s, and that's how I explain this occurrence of heart failure. There is a lot of research I found indicating that the experiences in the womb and the experiences in the first 4 or 5 years of our lives are predictors of heart disease much later. And I think it has to do with this, that the fact that the soul at that point is not fully buffered by the ego before the age of two, and the pain is held, the energetic pain is held in the energy field at the level of the heart chakra, which then goes through this explosion of pain, which causes death in late 40s, early 50s.
Now, I want to bring up another point that has scientific basis as well. It's well known that people with periodontal disease have an increased risk of heart attack, and let me explain how that science has developed. There are people who have looked at the spirochete that is located in the periodontal disease and found it's the same spirochete that is found in the vascular plaques of any atherosclerotic disease. Now, atherosclerotic disease that affects the heart leads to heart attack, and the carotids leads to stroke. So what's interesting is the spirochete is just transmitted by spit. I mean, it can be transmitted among family members and is fairly indiscriminate. And Dr. Norm Shealy came up with a treatment that's really brilliant. It's Pepto-Bismol. If you take Pepto-Bismol intermittently, well, you take it like 2 or 3 times a year for about 2 to 3 weeks, it will kill the spirochete and theoretically protect one from this disease. So again, like I did with the H. pylori, at the other end of things, there may just be a physical thing that can be transferred between people that can affect you without having the, you know, the chakra even involved. So I just throw it in as something interesting, but that's scientific information too. Periodontal disease is very much associated with heart disease. So it, you know, it may, you may not have one cause. It may be multifactorial.
Yeah, so I've really concentrated in this book on the stages of psychological failure to master a particular stage, and how that then plays through into the energetic world of the body,
right,
from the energetic world of the body into the material body, the physical body, and how that leads to death. That's been my – I have not in the book looked at anything to do with toxins or other – I'm looking at really the link between psychology and physiology, basically.
Yeah, I think Mother Teresa may have died of a heart attack. Is that right? Do you remember?
I don't. I have no idea.
I think she did, but her heart is obviously open. But she might have had periodontal disease, that's all. You know, I mean, it's very possible. So, but you're right. I mean, I've studied the chakra system. Well, I've been doing Temple of Health radio show for, I think, about 21 years now, and interviewed probably at least 50 authors on chakra books. So chakra science is very, very valid and very important. And certainly when you lower the energy to a certain part of your body, disease can result. And I think Carolyn May said that every case of cancer she's ever seen has had a chakra disruption associated with it. So people who are clairvoyant and can actually see the chakras notice that this is always present. So your book is very, very valuable in linking psychological development stages to these energetic potential problems, because in theory, if one could get through these stages of development with less failure, then we would all be healthier.
Right. And what I realized when I was writing this book, it was a bit of an experiment, the book. I had, an idea, but I didn't have the proof. And it was only when I studied the leading causes of death and when they occurred, and then made the link between when the leading causes, when the peak arrives, so the different causes of death, made that link back to the stages of development, that it all became clear. It all became clear. Now, it doesn't answer every situation, and that we would agree with that. But it is hugely significant what's going on in what I call the ego-soul dynamic, which for me is all about the ego, you know, is where we hold our fear, and the soul is where we hold our love. So the ego-soul dynamic is an energetic juxtaposition of fear against love, which impacts the energy field in a particular place in the body, which links to the chakra and the stage of development that you're at. Now, you mentioned the chakras quite a few times. In the book, I talk about the overactive chakra and the underactive chakra. Mm-hmm. And the underactive chakra is something, the underactive and the overactive chakra are caused by beliefs that we learn during the first 24 years of our lives, when our when our three mind brains are all growing and developing. And if you grew up as a child and failed to get your needs met consistently, you begin to learn that it's not worth struggling, and that means that causes the chakras at those first three levels to become underactive, because you don't struggle anymore to get your needs met. Some people will struggle and will get their needs met, but because of the struggle they had to get their needs met, their chakras become overactive. And so, again, this underactivity and overactivity of the chakra system is linked, I think, through to the stages of psychological development, which are all about, do I get my needs met or do I not get my needs met, or do I fear that I may not get my needs met? So in the book, I talk about the six emotions and how those emotions link through to feelings. Emotions simply being the energetic juxtaposition of, or shift in energy due to the juxtaposition of fear energy and love energy.
Richard, we're at the end of our hour now, but it's been a fascinating discussion, and I thank you for joining us.
Thank you. You know what? I've learned so much from you today.
Well, thank you. Well, we've been interviewing Richard Barrett. His latest book, The New Psychology of Human Well-Being, is a fascinating study of these different areas of psychological development linked to our soul, our ego, and our state of health. Thank you, Richard, for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Can I suggest, if people want to find out more about my books, they can go to richardbarrett.net?
Yes.
And you can find videos, books, etc. Richard Barrett, BARRETT.net. A whole wealth of information available there for people. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. This is Dr. Susan Cobb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.